Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, a great tackle by Steve Tasker. Into the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown!
Welcome to One Bills Live. Steve Tasker along with Chris Brown here from noon till 3 today talking about the Buffalo Bills and a lot of things going on for us today. We've got Dean Blandino, former vice president of the National Football League rules official. He's also the rules guru for the SEC and the I think the Pac-12 as well. I'm not sure. He also was with the XFL as their dean, as their rules czar. Also, we've got Pete Bomarito coming on Chris Brown, you jump in here. What do you call
Pete sports Bomarito? Trainer extraordinaire?
There you go. That's kind of the logo I was looking for. Pete Bomarito's kind of come on. At 2:30, he'll be with us. Dean Blandino will be at 1. Chris Brown, what do you think, man? You ready for the weekend, or we'll knock this out for 3 hours and then be on our way?
Yeah, I mean, I'm ready for the weekend, but I'm not in any hurry to get outside. It is coming down in buckets right now where I live. So
really.
Yeah, and I know there's some nasty stuff coming tonight as well, so it's going to be an interesting one here after we had some really nice weather earlier in the week. I don't know if we can say the same for the weekend.
As per usual, here in East Aurora, it is perfect. Sun's out.
Oh, come on.
It is. Sun's out. I could turn my camera to my front yard to show you, but the sun is out, and it's spectacularly gorgeous here in God's country. Thank you. All right, so Chris Brown, Steve Tasker here. Till 3 o'clock, One Bills Live. You can give us a call if you want to get on this conversation at 803-0550 or 1-888-552-550. Once again, as we always do, the first day we were on, Brownie, it took me forever to get to the Twitter poll. I'm going to do it right off the top of the show today.
Okay. You mind? I'm good with that.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Because everybody's been in a pandemic, and now we're starting. And as we get ready for the show, we're always seeing videos of all these guys everywhere. Today, there's a video out of Josh Allen and all those guys down in Florida running around all the rookies and all these guys. They're all getting together to do it. So the question was, off of that information that we have, what's the biggest challenge for NFL players this offseason? We gave you some choices, but that's what we want you to think about. What's the biggest challenge for NFL players this offseason? Is it A, conditioning and staying in shape? B, there's limited on-field reps. You can't get out and practice like they normally would. They would have been doing it for like 2-3 weeks, right?
Yeah, we'd be week two of OTAs by now.
Yeah, we'd be neck deep in it by now, but they're not. And then C, the one that's kind of harder for fans to answer to, I think, would be team chemistry. What's it like to work with guys, get together, start to make friends with these guys, start to care about each other, and become a really good football team? Or is it something else? You can give us a call or tweet at us right now. Limited on-field reps is running away with it a little bit. 44-45% of the respondents say, yeah, it's limited on-field reps. They can't get on the field and practice.
That's the one I voted for, Steve. And I was torn a little bit. It wasn't an easy decision because I think knowing and seeing how valuable team chemistry has been to the Bills each of the last few years and the way that Sean McDermott has cultivated that, talking, not being afraid to talk about loving each other and telling one another their personal story and why they play this game, I think has really bonded this team in a way we haven't seen here in quite some time. And that is hard to accomplish when you're not in the presence of one another. I mean, you could Zoom call all you want, but that's a harder bridge to cross when you're only seeing guys virtually and you're not up next to them or side by side in a locker room stall, you know, getting ready for practice, taping up, you know, your hands and whatnot and just chatting or going to dinner that night after today's OTA practice.
Yeah, it's interesting too.
As a position group.
Yeah, it's interesting too because what struck me as a former player was staying in shape. You know, and that's like trailing right now. It's like it's got 18% of the vote, and everybody else is like you. It's limited on field reps first, but then it's team chemistry. For me, it's staying in shape.
Well,
because most of these guys are trying to make the roster. You know,
that's right.
That's
Steve,
the challenge.
I wonder if this has an influence on the voting, and you tell me if you think I'm off base or not. All fans see on social media over the last 10 weeks has been what? Guys running routes, pumping iron in their home gyms, making unbelievable throws and catches, running up sand hills for conditioning work. So I think in their head, they're thinking everybody's doing that. The whole lot of them. 100% of the guys are doing this on their own, 5-6 days a week, 4 hours a day, because that's what they're being exposed to on social media. What do you think the accuracy of that is?
Let me put it to you this way. You've probably seen 20, 25 guys doing that. That's about all there is. Right?
Well,
that's about 20%. And we got Pete Bomarito coming on, the trainer, and I guess he came out yesterday or the day before and said about 20% of these guys that I know of are really committed. I think
it was another trainer that actually said that.
Right.
But we wanted
it might
to
have been
get
Bert Wiggum or somebody like that who did it. Yeah. But they're saying, you know, it's not that many guys that are like, you know, sold out for this. You know,
and the other thing too, Steve, and I don't know if this has any bearing on it, because I think if you're self-motivated, you're self-motivated. But these pro players are also creatures of habit. And I think to a certain extent, they're used to, okay, season's over in mid-January for just about all of them, with the exception of the two Super Bowl teams. Season's over about mid-January. I'm going to take 2-3 weeks off, do nothing. Then I'm going to ease my way back into it in mid-February. March, I'm going to really start hitting it hard again. And then those 2 weeks leading up to the start of the off-season conditioning program, I'm going to do A, B, C, and D. And then after that, I'm going to let the team take over to tell me what I need to do to get ready for the regular season or training camp or whatever the case might be. That was still there, but in a virtual sense. And we hear Eric Ciano, the Bills strength and conditioning coach, we hear Coach McDermott talk about it all the time, about how they like to create a competitive atmosphere in their off-season conditioning program. But the best way to accomplish that is when you've got
together
90 guys on site in one place. When you got 50 guys participating in a tug-of-war contest, that's competition at its essence, and that's what Sean McDermott and Eric Ciano love to cultivate, to have their team all the more ready when they're actually playing football on the field.
Yeah, you're right. And the problem is, and it was – I think it speaks to Sean McDermott's getting out ahead of this. He says, listen, you got to find a way. That's been their slogan this whole offseason. You've got to find a way. They've got to acknowledge this year, the coaching staff, that their hands are off. I mean, they got to just trust these guys. Certainly they can meet with them, talk with them. They can look at videos. I mean, Harrison Phillips, who's coming off an ACL early in last season, he's sending videos. He said, you know, for an hour and a half, my girlfriend is videoing me working out, and we send it to Eric Ciano or the crew over there at One Bills
Drive.
Well,
he's got to send it to his rehab specialist. Yeah,
right, so they send
it
over there.
Right.
Yeah, they send them over there. They get back tweaks, you know, so there's all that give and take. But there's also that's for, you know, Harrison Phillips, who I would say is one of those guys who is self-motivated. He's one of those high-energy guys who's by the book. I'm here. If I'm supposed to be there, I'm supposed to be there. And you said it early in what you just said, guys love a routine. And if they can get into a routine, that's, to me, half the battle. Because if they get into a routine, the workout will take care of itself. You're going to get in there. You're going to have some fresh stuff to do during it. But that schedule and having a workout crew and guys that are there with you is half the battle, because once you're together and doing it, you're going to start working out and you're going to hold each other accountable. And that's crucial, is the routine of it. But the routine's been disrupted. And that's why, unless they get up off the couch and get that structured for themselves, it's not going to happen.
But the thing that I think is the overarching thing that's sorely absent here are physical reps on the field in a team setting or even in a position group setting. I mean, they can't even, to a large degree, execute stuff that you do during individual position drills, you know, as a unit, whether you're talking about an offensive line lining up on bags and your offensive line coach putting you through, you know, whatever play he wants to call or whatever technique he wants them to execute, you know, combo blocks. You're not doing that right now.
Right.
So that's not getting repped. You're not getting a feel for the guy next to you and how to work a 2-on-1 and then let the tackle vacate so he can get to the second level, chip blocks with a teammate, that kind of stuff. That's all out the window. And then here's the other thing that's ringing in my ears, Steve, as we talk about the importance of the on-field reps. Sean McDermott, when he spoke to the media, I want to say about a month ago now, on a Zoom call, we asked him, what is your greatest concern about what is absent during this virtual offseason? And he said the reps on the field to establish the timing in the passing game. That is one of the top priorities, as they see it, that is critical to needing reps. And he even said, Steve, that when they do get back, whenever that is, into a team setting, that they're going to have to restructure their practice plans to make sure they can make up for the lost time for the passing game, for offensive drills and team periods.
Yeah, think about this. And for most people who didn't play football, or it's been a long time since you have played football, if you're out there listening, think about this. This happens every year, and you take it so much for granted. You have a meeting just before that first practice and with your position coach or whatever, and they tell you, say, listen, when we get out there, here's what we're going to do. This is how we're going to warm up. This is where you stand. This is the little ball drill we're going to do. This is the little individual stretch that you're going to do. This is where we line up. This is our area of the field that we run to when we break from stretch. They got to walk through all that, because the more prepared you get out there and you know where you're running to, the better practice goes subsequently. So these rookies like Zach Moss and all these guys, they don't even know where to go when they break stretch. You know, they don't even know who to look for or where to run to. So, and that sounds like a little thing, but that's where they got to start from these guys like Jake Fromm, Gabriel Davis, all these guys, Tyler Bass, Isaiah Hodgins. They don't know where to, they don't even know where, first of all, they don't even know where the meeting room is right now, because they've never been in the building. They don't know where their position group is. They don't know where to walk to. They don't know, you know, they don't even know where their locker is in the locker room right now. And all this would have been, by this time, Brownie, it would have been second nature already. That would have been second nature. So that's how far behind they are in some of this stuff. And you can say, well, that stuff's not really crucial. Well, all this stuff has to be taken care of before they get to the stuff that's absolutely critical for winning football games. You know, it's just a progression that has been delayed by that much.
I'm going to take this another step further. Granted, when they were doing combine interviews, they didn't know the pandemic was hitting yet. But come mid-March, when they started doing their 30 visits virtually with draft prospects in mid-March, late March, early April, leading up to the draft, I wonder how many teams, when they were interviewing these players, we know they put them on the board, in this case virtually. They probably have a whiteboard up and, you know, or who knows, maybe they asked the prospect to have a whiteboard handy so they can draw stuff up for them virtually. I wonder how many of them were put through the paces to show they can understand it on the board, because, as you know, Steve, there are some players in the league who can see it on the board and immediately translate it to the field. And there are others who are called physical learners that have to physically rep it on the field to understand it, remember it, and execute it consistently. And so I wonder if there was some measure of that in their interviews across the league where they said, look, we may not have an off season where we get to rep anything. We may need to grade this guy a little bit higher because he can take it from the board to the field where this kid, unless we physically put him through it on the field, he may not get it right away. And if we're counting on this guy to help us out early, we may have an issue here.
Yeah, you're right. And
I'm just speculating.
Because guys do learn differently. And that's why the coaching staff over the course of even since I was playing and also, you know, in the years, obviously in the decades that I haven't been playing and I've been retired, the way they teach these guys has become utmost in their priority list. Some of these guys, they started to realize by consulting with experts that some of these guys need to walk through it. They need to see it. Some of them X's and O's on and lines on a paper. Hey, I get it. Others have to see it, want to see it on film. Others want to walk through it. Others want to do it against a defense. Others need to hear the words and see it at the same time. You know what I'm saying? So there's a ton of different ways they do it, and they try to present it every way and understand how this kid learns. So all of this stuff goes into the mesh, and that goes into the challenges in our Twitter poll for today. What's the biggest challenge for NFL players this offseason? It's conditioning, no limited on-field reps, team chemistry. What's the biggest challenge? Here was Steve Tasker, Chris Brown on One Bills Live. Today we've got Dean Blandino, Fox Sports and NCAA rules analyst and former NFL MVP of officiating from 2013 through 2017. They need to get him back in the building. And also Pete Bomarito, who is the owner and president of Bomarito Performance Systems. He's staff. They train hundreds of professional athletes, thousands of youth guys, high school, collegiate athletes every year. And also he's obviously working with a bunch of Bills players as well. So Pete Bomarito will be on at 2:30, Dean Blandino at 1.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of those Bills players are down in South Florida this weekend. I saw that.
I know.
Josh was supposed to be flying in there so he could get some throwing in with some guys, including Stephon Diggs and some of the tight ends on Buffalo's roster, Sweeney, Knox, even Nate Becker, who was his practice squad guy, is down there with them. That tight end group's pretty tight, those younger fellas, because they're all the same age. And there's a few other guys that are down there as well. I know Devin Singletary obviously doesn't live far. Zach Moss is down in that area. So there should be about upwards of 10 or 11 guys, hopefully rotating through workouts through the course of the weekend. I know the restrictions are considerably looser in the state of Florida than they are up here in New York State. But I don't know. I still don't believe you can do 10 or more people. So it'll be interesting to see how they work the rotation there and get their work in. And I guess Bomarito is helping them out a little bit from what I understand. So it'd be good to kind of check in with him and see how he's had to morph and change perhaps some of the things that he typically does for their players in an offseason, knowing that his time with them is lengthier than it usually is. Most of these guys are gone by now. Mid-April, they're back up with their respective NFL clubs. That's not the case.
Yeah, and some of the guys that are down there that we've been told that are down there, obviously Josh Allen, Steph Diggs, Dawson Knox is down there, Tommy Sweeney, Jason Kroom, Nate Becker, all those tight ends, Diggs, John Brown, Isaiah McKenzie, Nick Easley, who was on the practice squad last year, Gabe Davis, Isaiah Hodgins, and running back Devin Singletary are all down there hanging out. And so while we're talking about that, we're going to get into that with Pete Bomarito at about 2:30 and what those guys are up to. Dean Blandino's coming on at 1. You know, and here's the thing, quick recap of some of the stuff we talked about yesterday. Touchdowns and turnovers are going to automatically be reviewed, and they included even the ones that are negated by penalty are going to automatically be reviewed. Right. And that brings in – and I'm going to ask Dean about this. What's that gray area that you mentioned and we get both got? Does that mean – they'll pick the flag up or enforce the penalty or confirm the penalty so the play goes negated anyway, or, you know, all that stuff.
I think they're going the other way there. The flag goes down, the touchdown's negated. Well, hold on. Let's just take a look at it, make sure the flag was properly, you know, adjudicated under the letter of the law, and, you know, we're good.
That sounds crazy to me if
or,
they do that.
Yeah, I wonder what the leeway is going to be, too. Like, what if the flag was thrown for something that was away from the play?
Exactly.
On the backside of a play, had nothing to do with the outcome of the play. Does that get negated?
Exactly.
I want to know. I want to know, and hopefully we get some answers from Mr. Blandino.
Right. And also, they also enlarged the defenseless players for kickoff returns and punt returners. The guy that's catching the
puzzled,
ball.
That one puzzled me. The wording of it is what puzzled me, where they're saying he doesn't have time to ward off the impending contact of an opponent.
That speaks of like a halo rule to me. Like in the Canadian Football League, they have to give him 5 yards all the way around him, like a circle. It's a big circle. So they get a lot of returns up there because the guy knows nobody's going to touch him.
Well, we already have the halo rule. So that's why I was kind of confused on that. So hopefully he can lend some clarity to that one, because that one puzzled me. It seemed redundant to what they already have.
And then the multi-dead ball fouls. Last year in the Jets and New England game, New England took multiple dead ball fouls because the clock kept running after they set the ball after the penalty. The clock started again, and they just kept taking dead ball fouls. So then it was reversed, and the Tennessee Titans did the exact same thing to the New England Patriots to close out the playoff game that they won. So even after it happened in the Jet-New England game, Belichick said, listen, it's a loophole. It'll probably be changed this next year. It should be changed, but as long as it's open, we're using it. And then it got used back against him as well. So that is changed back to you can't do that. And then, of course, the 3 players off IR instead of 2, which there'll be some specific instances that it'll help teams, but how many it is remains to be seen.
What did you make of some of the news that came out after the fact about why the 4th and 15 rule was tabled? Because apparently the show of hands among the owners was an even split, 16-16. And then after that, some of the NFL network reporters and national reporters for some of the major networks were saying that there is concern among some of the ownership that teams with the all-world quarterbacks would have an unfair advantage in a 4th and 15 situation. And there was another argument too, Steve, that said, hey, you fought to have the lead in this game. Does the 4th and 15 at the 25-yard line with a guy like Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, Chris Brownie, you cut out on us, Brownie. I hope that's you and not me. I think it is. But yeah, by a guy with Aaron Rodgers.
There
you go.
Possession.
Brownie, start that again. You clicked out on us. Right at the Sorry. If you've got one of those elite quarterbacks, then what'd you
say? If you have one of those elite quarterbacks, you know, are you giving that team an unfair advantage? Because in this 4th and 15 situation, you can advance the ball. As you know, on an onside kick, you cannot advance the ball. It's strictly an attempt to regain possession. And so the ability to advance the ball seems to be an issue with some of these owners.
To me, that doesn't carry any weight at all. Certainly you can say, yeah, this quarterback's better than that one. Okay, that's true. But you know what? If you're going to have him kick the ball, they've got Justin Tucker on their side. We don't have that guy, right? We don't have the best kicker has ever done. And we don't have the special teams aces that can go down and recover an onside kick. We just got guys who were throwing out there. We don't spend much time. You know, if you're going to talk about quality of player on rosters, what are you talking about? Everybody's trying to get those guys. If you can't get those guys, that works against you on the game at every situation, not just an onside kick or surprise onside kick. I don't want to hear this about they've got a better quarterback than we do, so we don't want that rule change. Well, what are you talking about? In fact, here's the thing. That's why I'm a big proponent of this rule going through, because that's what you don't want. Some obscure kicker that you've hired on Thursday because your kicker pulled a groin. You don't want some obscure kicker kicking the ball in overtime trying to get the ball back for your team. You want the MVP on the field, both for the competitive rules and for the television ratings that it gets you. They don't want to see that guy on the field. They want to see Mahomes on the field. They want to see Lamar Jackson on the field. They want to see Josh Allen, Dak Prescott on the field. That's why the game's played, is because of the stars.
I just found it interesting that there were owners that had a genuine concern and undoubtedly in their head were picturing 75-yard touchdown plays on 4th and 15 from their own 25.
An untimed down.
Yeah.
Right, an untimed down.
It's bizarre where their thinking goes when they're contemplating, well, you know, this season I've got to play Aaron Rodgers and Deshaun Watson and Dak Prescott. And, man, what if I get in a situation where I got to face all of those guys in a do-or-die situation on a 4th and 15 at my own 25, and I know I've got the 20th-ranked defense in football? I mean, that's the owner that's putting his hand up saying, you know what, I don't think we want to vote on this yet.
Yeah, you think about it, and that – it comes down, you got to play defense. And I don't know why it always comes down to, on these rule things, like, well, gosh, I don't know, what if my defense isn't very good? Well, that's your fault. You know, that's like the Chiefs when they got beat by the Patriots and never got to see the ball in overtime 3 years ago. That's your fault for having a defense that stinks. Fix it. You know, fix it before you get into an overtime game. I get it. I mean, some of the owners, and I have a hard time believing, and maybe I'm naive. How can they not see the big picture here? You know, it's not about their team this year. What are they going to do when they don't make that rule change and all of a sudden they draft Pat Mahomes? You know, and now they don't get the advantage of it. I mean, it's just crazy talk to me. It's crazy talk.
Right. And correct me if I'm wrong. There was language in there that they got to be down by 15 with under a certain amount of time to play.
And you can only do it twice.
And you can only do it twice. Right. I mean, what they should be doing is putting their analytics departments to work and saying, how often is this going to come up over the course of a 16-game season? Like, what are the percentages that it turns up on a per-game basis, and what are the percentages as to how many times this may actually be employed over a 16-game season for our club against these opponents? There's a way to devise that, and
sure,
I would venture to guess you're looking at a play for a single NFL team over the course of 16 games that's coming up, what, twice a season? Maybe three times?
Maybe. If it happened 10 times, 1.5 of those times would be successful. Between 1.5 and 2 times. So you're talking about 2 out of 10, 1 out of 5 times, which to me seems, yeah, okay. I can live with that.
It doesn't sound like a catastrophic thing by any means.
I know, right?
So it was like everybody, half the league turned into Chicken Little yesterday. The sky is falling. You know.
I can't believe it. All right, Steve Tasker, Chris Brown, we're at One Bills Live. Yeah, and also he said this, and here's why. The league moves like a glacier sometimes, right, Brownie? Particularly in the rules. Last year, I think they're still licking their wounds from botching it last year.
100%.
In OPI, right? Here, think back about this, Brownie. Back in my career, instant replay got killed in 1991. They did away with it. Then they tested it again 5 years later in 1996. Then it was voted down in 1997 and brought back in 1999. And in the two decades since, they've started, you know, they've awarded a third challenge. Scoring replays were automatically reviewed. Turnovers were automatically reviewed. And the delays caused by those reviews have steadily decreased. Because you can pick and choose which plays are the most controversial, and that has helped. You're talking about from 1991 till 2020 that they're dealing with this, and that's 29 years that they've been tinkering with this.
One thing we should also mention is, in addition to the scoring plays negated by penalty being subject to automatic review, they're also going to be doing the point after tries. There are times, Steve, where you see that field goal attempt and the ball goes over seemingly the very top of the upright pole.
Right.
And you're like, did that get a part of the, was it even with the top of the upright or was it wide? You know, sometimes the angles on TV or where you're sitting in the stadium watching the game are awful. But man, and I know they've got a official under each upright looking straight up at that thing to make sure that it covers at least part of the upright if it goes straight over the top of one of the poles.
Right.
But it's interesting that those are going to be reviewed also if it seems like a close call.
And here's the thing that you got to know, and this is the thing that's amazing. After the uprights go up and then they stop with, you know, those yellow pipes that we've seen a gazillion times, we all know what they look like, they get wider after they stop, meaning that if the ball goes over the top of the upright, it's good. It is a good field goal.
Right.
If the inside edge of the football goes inside the outside edge of that pipe, that field goal is good. That's the thing that people miss. So the ball could just – so, for instance, if the ball went below the top of the upright and just skipped off the outside of the upright, that would have been good had it gone over the top of the pipe. Yeah. You know?
So you almost the crazy have more part leeway. About it. More leeway if you get more height on the kick.
That's
because
right.
Obviously, if it was below the top of the pipe, it would hit the upright and carom off and be no good.
That's right.
Yeah, that's interesting. The other thing, Steve, before we get to the break, because we're quickly up on the bottom of the hour here, that we should mention before we close this first segment, is the memo from Commissioner Goodell to the NFL clubs that was circulated by a bunch of national reporters as well, which basically indicated the strong possibility that coaches are going to be back in the building as early as next week. And the Bills could be part of that conversation as well, because there is a chance, a decent chance anyway, from everything we've been reading, that New York State will enter phase two on Monday, provided the data and the numbers hold as they have currently been going. They are going to make coaches a part of phase two to get back in the building, but no players yet.
Yeah, and as we said earlier in the broadcast as well, Texas looks like in a couple of weeks they're going to open up their pro sports leagues. You can have games without fans and as much as 20 to 25% of your fans in the stadium. Right. So that'll be interesting to track that as these states open up. Too. Yeah, and let's see what I had. 25, before we go to break here, 25 states were decreasing in their coronavirus numbers. 10 of them were stagnant, and 15, I think those numbers are right, 15 were actually increasing in their coronavirus cases. So we're still on a roller coaster right here, and I think it's gonna be interesting to see how it happens state to state. So we'll keep track of it. We're going to take a break. Steve Tasker, Chris Brown at One Bills Live. We've got Dean Blandino from Fox Sports. He's the rules analyst for them and also former NFL VP of officiating. You all know who Dean Blandino is. And, of course, Pete Bomarito, owner and president of Bomarito Performance Systems, training dozens of pro athletes. And we're going to get into those challenges that are happening as we progress through this offseason. Steve Tasker, Chris Brown, One Bills Live from our homes. And this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Steve Tasker along with Chris Brown. Brownie, Mark, this marks a very monumental day in the radio broadcast between you and me. We've got a call on the phone at 12:30. This is the earliest we've ever taken a call, so mark that down, Jay Harrison. Derek on line one. Derek, you got something to say about our Twitter handle or a Twitter poll or whatever else is on your mind. Go ahead, Derek. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thank you for taking the call here. You know, you were talking about the rule changes, and I was wondering if the league considered, based on the virus and based on the chance that the rookies aren't really getting a free run this year and the fans aren't going to see the rookies as much this year and the teams aren't getting a chance to work them out this year, if the NFL considered some type of exemption for the rookies this first year so they can stay with these clubs. Almost like the collegiate sports have done with the redshirting of players, because I think there's going to be some premature cuts of some pretty good people because they didn't get a chance to work out with the coaches and the systems. And I really thought that they would perhaps let these first-year players get a chance to work with these teams for another year, kind of like a trial and balance type thing. And did you hear anything like that, or would you think that'd be a good idea?
Yeah, I could see that happening, Derek. It's a good question, but here's the thing. Now's not the time for that. They don't even know how difficult it will be. I mean, you can anticipate that, but for the simple fact is, there's a couple of things about this, and Brownie, you can chime in here too.
Yep.
I hear a lot of coaches going through training camp, and one of the laments they have is that they spend their time coaching these kids up who they know are not going to make the team. And for them, it's a waste of time. They know who's going to make their squad pretty well, pretty early. But they got these guys around that they're helping. They'll do what they can for them, but they're not going to make this team. And so going the other way, saying that you're going to cut guys who might have a chance or would have developed into, I think it's too early to think about that now. I don't know that you're going to see a rash or a rise in the number of guys in that situation that you would any other year. You know what I'm saying? So while this year is a different in the offseason, I don't know that the results are going to be all that different as to which guys made the team. Maybe the guys that make the team won't be playing as well as they would have with a full offseason, but I don't know at this point we can go so far as to say the roster would have been vastly different than it will be on opening day this year.
I'm just going to say under the new CBA, you're already going to have two more players in the locker room after you reduce the roster to 53, because practice squad numbers go up from 10 to 12 this year. So you're already going to have two more spots to have a young player hang around, granted not on the active roster, but on the practice squad, and I understand they're not completely protected there. They could be signed away by another club, but every other club has 12 guys on their practice squad too. So I think that's going to probably suffice in terms of taking care of that concern that you expressed, Derek. I know it's only two spots and it doesn't seem like much, but if you talk to teams and personnel departments, they say being able to keep two extra guys on a practice squad to groom and develop and give them the extra time through the course of the season when everybody's back will be invaluable. And then to take it a step further, knowing they're probably still going to be dealing with coronavirus precautions and protocol through the course of the regular season, knowing a vaccine at the earliest is coming at year's end, I don't know if you want to have extra people around. Yeah. As callous as that may sound, I don't know if you want to increase your numbers if you don't have to. So
here's,
it's just an extra person that can contract and spread the virus.
And here's another thing, too. I've fallen victim, I'll call it that, just like Derek, the caller, did, to saying, you know, there's going to be some guys who may or may not be able to evaluate. I don't think it's going to come to that. As I think more about it, my experience has been, listen, the guys are going to make the team are going to make the team. It's easy enough to find that out and see that there may be – there are less than a handful of guys, let alone positions, that are on that, well, do we keep this guy or that guy, this guy or that guy? And it's not – it's less than a handful on every team of guys, let alone positions. So I don't think it's going to be a question of which guys make the team. The question becomes this. How good are the young guys going to be early in the season when they haven't had as much preparation as we've seen young guys have in years past? Are the good young guys going to be good enough, quick enough to contribute? And Sean McDermott said it the other day, Brownie, when he said, listen, we're going to try, best case scenario, we're going to ease A.J. Epenesa into the line. You know what I mean? He right. kind of sees it coming. We're going to ease him in. Hopefully he'll get good enough, fast enough, and we'll be able to get do that, you know, give him a full rotation early, but he doesn't anticipate that being the case in a perfect world.
Yeah, and as you said earlier in the week on the show, Ed Oliver was the ninth pick in the draft, and he was kind of on that same track. And that was with a full off season, with OTAs and mini camp and training camp. So
without the coronavirus.
That's what I mean. Yeah. So, and he was the ninth pick in the draft. So you would tend to think they're certainly going to do that with A.J. Epenesa.
Thanks for the call, Derek. Anybody else can chime in as well, 803-0550 or 1-888-552-550. Give us a call. What are the greatest challenges for NFL players this offseason? Is it conditioning and staying in shape? Is it limited on-field reps, not getting being able to get together as a team? Or is it just the chemistry that comes from that? Chime in. Let us know how you vote. Almost 50% of you think it's limited on-field reps. The fact that the team can't get together and walk through stuff, you think is the biggest challenge. I might have to agree with that in the long term, although that's not what I voted. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Give us a call. We also want to talk about this. Things are changing all the time, Brownie, and Field Yates came out and reiterated what the governor of Texas said on announced for his state coming up in just a couple of weeks. A couple of weekends, I guess. Mid-June, they're going to say, okay, outdoor stadiums and professional sports are opened up. If you want to go out there, if you can put games on, you are able to do that if you so desire. And you can have up, I don't know what percentage, I can't remember the exact percentage
he said,
put on the crowds, but he said there was
outdoors-
that attached to.
Right. Outdoor stadiums will be allowed to host fans up to 25% of their capacity. Now, Steve, I haven't seen everything that's out there and been said by the governors of all 50 states, but this is the first that I can remember seeing where a governor of a state specifically listed fans in the stands and a percentage on top of that. There may have been another instance here or there where that was the case, but seeing this for the first time, I have to believe, is pretty encouraging because he put a number on it and said fans in the stands mid-June, September, October, in 2 weeks.
That's a massive concession that really takes the pressure off the sports leagues and the franchises to say, well, what are we going to do? What if we open our stadiums to 25% of the fans and everybody starts coming down with the virus? Are we liable? You know, trying to take precautions and all of that, But by saying it, listen, the government giving us permission, we're following their guidelines, that takes the impetus off the clubs and says, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to take all the precautions we can that are reasonable, and we're going to stagger the people coming into and out of the stadium. We're going
to
do all of that. Yeah, all of that stuff that we've talked about. Everybody needs to have a mask on. I don't know how they're going to enforce it once people get into the stadium and they're sitting two chairs apart. What's going to keep people from hugging if a touchdown happens or a home run happens? How are they going to enforce that? Are they just going to go with a public address announcer saying, hey, guys, break it up, you know?
Yeah. Section 332, yeah,
right.
You're too close to one another. Please Whatever. Disperse.
But it's a massive relinquishing of those responsibilities on the clubs. They've been given permission to do this, so now they can probably do it without the liability that would come from it just being an individual franchise making the decision.
And I know, talking to you before we went on the air, this was another thing that I had kind of thought of with respect to getting these fans in the stadium, albeit at 25% capacity. As you said, you're still going to have to stagger the entry times for these fans. You're going to have to print on their ticket or send them some kind of text communication that says, you are part of entry group A. You will enter at 11:30 a.m. for a 1 p.m. game. You must do it at 11:30 or between 11:30 and 11:45, or you are going to have to wait until after kickoff to enter said stadium. The other thing they're going to have to go over is concessions, Steve, because yeah. you can't have 20 people standing next to each other in line waiting for a hot dog. You're going right. to have to set up some kind of ordering system where you can order on your phone and they bring it to you.
You
can't have 20 people in line for a beer.
Remember, there won't be 20. There'll only be five because you're only at 25% capacity.
Well, right? I guess that depends on how many concession stands you have in your stadium. But yes.
Think about this. The timing of the entrance into the stadium, you're going to have 25% of the people you normally do going through 100% of the gates that you usually have open. So that's going to be reduced too. So it won't be as – certainly they'll have to do it, but it won't be as difficult seemingly as it usually is to stagger them in because there'll be that many less people coming to the game, and you'll have the exact same infrastructure to allow them to come in. You know, so that'll help.
But here's the thing.
Here's
the thing. There are people that, you know, fans are creatures of habit too. They tailgate till a certain amount of time, and then they say, hey, 12:15, we're heading in. Well, if you have too many people with that idea, you got a problem. So you got to stagger it. So I think you do have to police it and give them certain times. I think there's – I hate to say this, but it's going to get down to these kinds of specifics. When do a lot of people like to use the restrooms? Halftime. You can't send everybody to the restroom at halftime anymore. Yep. I mean, that's a closed, tight area. It's an enclosed space. People are close together in there at halftime. It's bumper to bumper. So you got to figure that out too.
Yeah, you might. Listen, I was kind of joking, but the PA system might be your greatest ally. Just have the guy say, listen, guys on the end zone side, the scoreboard into the stadium between sections such and such and such and such, bathroom break.
You know? It sounds nuts, but it makes sense to that.
Think about it. However they can do it, they'll do it. I don't know. This is a slippery slope and a can of worms that you can talk about all day. We can't do it all. We're going to take a break right now before we move on. We can get back to this. Give us a call at 803-0550 or 1-888-552-550. If you have an idea about how to do the entrance and egress of the stadium with 25% capacity, give us a call. We'd like to hear about that. And also, if you have an idea as to what the biggest challenge for NFL players is this offseason, give us a call on that as well. Steve Tasker, Chris Brown, we're here till 3. This is Buffalo Bills Radio, and this is One Bills Live. Welcome back to One Bills Live. We're going to have an interesting conversation about the local wildlife during this pandemic, and there's a lot going on. I've had red foxes on my property. Brownie, you said you had this behemoth raccoon.
Oh, it was a raccoon that looked like an overweight dog just sitting on the back stoop by my sliding door. It's like he was waiting for a handout.
Right.
It's like, hey, where's my meal here? I called for curbside pickup. What's going on? And I was just like, my dog's staring at this thing like, who the heck is this guy? It was unbelievable.
we got into this conversation because there's a story coming out of India that they got these coronavirus tests that got pilfered and stolen by these macaque monkeys that you've kind of seen. If you've seen national wildlife stuff, these monkeys are like pigeons. They're like little human beings that are pigeons that they steal any food that you leave out, and they'll break into stuff. And they accosted this medical worker, took all his coronavirus blood tests that they had taken from people, and ran off with them. Basically,
they had to retest everybody because
they had to retest all these people. So, and then that, you know, these monkeys, everybody's locked down, so nobody's out and about leaving food around for these monkeys to eat. So now they're getting a little bit aggressive. Anybody they do see seems to be fair game. So, the wiles and the trials and tribulations of the pandemic world.
We've had red fox out here too, Steve, and like I said, the raccoon. We've had deer traipsing through here. I got a red-tailed hawk looking for field mice around here, I guess, because he circles my house all the time. There's got to be something flying, you know, running around out here that he likes. So,
hey, we ended the last segment talking about the opening and the Texas governor coming out and saying that they were going to open up their pro sports leagues and their outdoor stadiums 25% capacity in mid-June. Also, the Rams have announced that August 14th, the opening at SoFi Stadium. So they're going to, that probably won't be a preseason game, right, Brownie? That'll be like a concert or something. That's the way they were going to open it. Is that where it's going to be?
I would think. But,
well, the Rams made the announcement, so it's not, you know what I mean? So it's got to be a football thing, right, if the Rams are going to open it. And then, of course, Hard Rock Stadium. If you haven't heard about this, oh, my gosh, the Miami Dolphins. They're making their stadium into a drive-in theater, which.
They said they can accommodate up to 230 cars on the field there.
What's the movie going to be?
Ace Ventura, right? That's got a Dolphins tie-in, right?
That's a good one. That is absolutely a good one. That we should have a playlist for what the movie should be for the opening of Hard Rock Stadium.
They said they can get 230 cars in there, so people can quote unquote go to the movies, and they're going to provide restrooms. Which again, I think you got to worry about too many people congregating in the restroom.
Or do they just
About an hour in after the big gulps have been consumed, there's going to be a mad dash there. So I don't know how they're going to work that. And, Steve, I thought about this too. I can't imagine the groundskeeper's thrilled with this arrangement. You know, the head groundskeeper at Hard Rock Stadium.
Brownie, here's what happens. The Bills Mafia have a tailgate before this opening of this, and they go in in a big four-wheel drive mud eater and just spin donuts all the way across that stadium, right? With the Bills flag flying.
What do they usually do? They lay down,
right?
They lay down what, like plastic flooring?
Yeah,
I think
they plywood's what it is. They lay down plywood and they do that, and then they cover it with whatever. But they lay down sheets of plywood usually. But wouldn't that like ruin the ambiance of the whole thing if you don't get a drive? You know, get to sit on the grass while you're in the drive-in.
I don't think people are looking for perfection these days. They're just looking to get the heck out of the house.
But they are. But granted, we're talking about these stadiums that are going to open up, and people are going to start to be able to congregate together for events like this. But don't forget, the one they're talking about in L.A., SoFi Stadium, that's 10 weeks away. That's 10 and a half weeks away. That's all of June, all of July, and 2 weeks into August. It's a long way away. And anything could happen between now and then. And that's in
construction calendars go, though, that's pretty tight. In terms of all they got to get done out there,
I think they're on. Last we heard, they're on schedule because they kept going. That's one of the construction was one of the essential things that they kept going, and they've had a handful of people test positive on site, and they just kept rolling along. It's like the Hoover Dam. You know, guy falls into the concrete. You know, hey, you just keep going. So, that never happened, by the way. That's a myth. But you know what I'm saying? I mean, the wheels of progress kept grinding out in Southern Cal with the SoFi Stadium and also with Allegiant Stadium in Vegas as well. Vegas Stadium is going to be on time. So when that opens up, we have not heard anything about that. But the LA Stadium's opening up mid-August. And does it make a difference that the Rams made that announcement? Does that mean it's a football preseason game?
It could be if it's mid-August, because that's when the preseason schedule starts. It's right around the 14th, 15th, 16th, 17th. It's right in there. So, it could be.
All right, coming up at the top of the hour, Dean Blandino, former VP of officiating for the National Football League. And also, he is this Fox Sports rules analyst, as well as the NCAA rules analyst as well. Dean Blandino coming up after this break. Steve Tasker, Chris Brown, One Bills Live. This is Buffalo Bills Radio, presented by Kaleida Health.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.